Okay. So what virtues are in this particular passage that jump out at anybody?
Quiet life. Avoiding drama.
Work.
Mm-hmm.
Mind your own business.
Don't be a busybody and, you know, getting caught up in gossip and all that.
That's the first thing I thought of when I read that, too. But as we think about, well, let me ask this. What are our overall responsibilities as parent? Well, I'm already giving one of them away. Parents. Overall responsibilities in society.
Well, you look at the flamboyant lifestyles of the, you know, the people you see on TV, what I call Hollywood. You know, I mean, look what I went with Michael Jackson just recently, you know, and all that stuff you see, and just, I guess put simply, don't be part of that.
Right.
Not just be self-righteous or pharisaic about it, but just you just see the folly, and just like, it's not wrong to have prosperity and all that, but just the way they live and all that without that Christian worldview. Just, you know, they could rise up fast, but they could go down in flames fast too.
Exactly. And where do you think some of our focuses should be, or our focus should be, given the sin of the world out there? Trying to think of how I want to word this without really answering it. Well,
children. God fearing children.
Yes, yes. And as parents, we want to pass that on to our kids. So our focus should really be on the home front. How do we want to pass that on to our children? And so, as I was thinking about this, you know, we have several responsibilities. We're husbands, we're wives, we're parents, each of us have our own job per se, whether it's a job out in society or job in the home, taking care of the home. But at the end of the day, it's really about the home and passing on things that are important to our children. But let me reference another passage that Pastor Card pointed out to me. 2 Peter 1 verses 3 through 10.
What's referenced?
It is 2 Peter 1, verses 3 through 11. If I did, said that incorrectly the first time. James, you...
3 through 10?
Yeah, 3 through 11.
3 through 11. You want to just have people pick one verse at a time.
Was that 1 Peter?
2 Peter. Did I say that incorrectly?
I'm second Peter. You said second.
Okay.
2 Peter chapter
2 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 11.
Yeah, we'll
okay. Everybody pretty much there?
I'll find it.
Okay. Okay.
It's here somewhere.
Do we...
Starts the end. I know.
Yeah, do we want to take a verse at a time?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just go ahead and start with verse 3, and we can go to go this direction over here. His divine power has given us everything we need in life and godliness through our knowledge in Him who called us by His own glory and goodness.
Yeah.
Through these he has given us his very great and precious promises, so that through them we may participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption in the world caused by evil desires.
For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness, knowledge.
And to knowledge, self-control, and to self-control, perseverance, and to perseverance, godliness.
And to godliness, brotherly kindness, and brotherly kindness, love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ.
But if anyone does not have them, he is nearsighted and blind, and has forgotten that he has been cleansed from his past sins.
Therefore, my brother, be all the more eager to make your calling and election sure, for if you do these things, you will never fail.
And you will receive a rich welcome into the eternal kingdom of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Okay, thank you, everybody. So, bottom line, I think that it's important to not be focused or not be distracted, I maybe is a better way to say it, of what the world has to offer. Always focus on what Christ has given us and recognize that at the end of the day, that is what is important. Eternity, our focus should be on eternity, not the fads that pass today, pass around today. So, getting back to this verse, leading a quiet life, it's focusing on the finer details that go on in the home front and trying to do what is right in God's sight or focus on his commandments. And as far as working with the hands, you're getting down to the details that keep our minds occupied on what's important and what's not. That being the Word of God and being in the Word with your family. So any thoughts? Any other thoughts that jump out at you on that? Sure.
Well, I know I don't remember the exact chapter and verse. I know it's in the New Testament referring to those who don't work, shall eat.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I mean, aside from the economy and jobs lost, there are still plenty of people out there who don't want to work. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I struggle when I see people who are paddling it like that. I frankly don't want to give in. I really don't. I very seldom give them anything, like even a dollar. I seldom ever do because I feel like either they're going to do it pretty good, or they're just going to feed a drug or alcohol habit.
Right.
And frankly, not to boast, more I just feel better giving to ministries, even though they're not Lutheran, like Union Gospel or other ministries that get help to those who have a desire to get their lives back on track.
And sure.
Get the food, get the shelter, go through rehab programs, get jobs and housing, stuff like that. Because I feel like the money's not being wasted.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Good point.
I'm buying drugs with money, so they take my, mm-hmm. my drugs. I remember with Paul, when his brother Paul got married, we were out in Texas, and somebody came to the church wanted money for food. So me and Paul got in his truck, and we're going to take him to the store to get him food. Not only mm-hmm. money, but get him food. So on the way to the store, he sees another church, says, okay, let me off here. This is close to where I live. Let me off. And he went to my church, asked for more money. Didn't want food. Mm-hmm. You got to watch that. You have a big heart. A friend of mine used to just give people, if somebody asks you for money, and you pull out your wallet, and you've got all this cash in there, once they see your money, a lot of them they want to see your money, so they grab it and run. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you not to even do that. I know it sounds mean, but I had an argument with Jim Holman years ago about this. Jim's a big hearted guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But by my experience, most people who are homeless are homeless for a reason. Right? They're homeless because they've got some kind of addiction mm-hmm. that's made them homeless. There's very few people who are homeless, but as far as I know, just my own personal experience, and I've run into a lot of homeless people, they're homeless because, I've actually never run into anyone who's homeless because, through a set of circumstances beyond their control, they just were kicked out of their house and they had nowhere to go. there's always some kind of addiction involved. It's my experience. Like I said, Jim Holman's experience is different. That's Jim. And Jim and I are kind of opposite spectrum.
I guess we have to just, put, I know we're maybe getting off the tangent a little bit, but I think it's just a fine balance between having capacity Jesus wants to have for the poor, and Jesus said we'll always have the poor. Of course, there is also, it does balance out with the Bible verse, even Proverbs talk about the sluggard. People are just pure lazy. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to be discernible as far as, you know, here, really, go ahead.
Over here on Birdcage, mm-hmm. where there used to be, probably 2 years ago, there was this gentleman that was always standing there and wanting money. Uh-huh. And then one day, I don't remember what day it was, but I was driving home, dropping the kids off at school, driving home, and there he stood. And a suit without the jacket, but you know, dressed very nice, holding up a big sign, and it said, "Thank you. Thank you for all you gave to me."
And wow.
That was like, whoa. How many times do you? You don't. No.
But
people helped him, and you don't know if it was alcohol, drugs, mental illness. We're all really one paycheck away from being homeless. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We really are, because if you lose your job, you use your savings up. What do you have if you don't?
Family.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a support
system. You
have family.
Yeah. You know, but they can only do so much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it makes it really hard, because, you know, like what they were saying before. Rich was saying, my parents would find somebody who wanted some money, and they said, come on, we'll take it, we'll feed you, we'll give you a meal.
Yep.
And they'd buy him a meal, and he'd sit there, he didn't eat it at all, because he didn't want that. You know, so you do that enough times, and it makes you so hesitant.
Yeah.
And where we, over on Antelope Road, there's always people sitting by the corner by Walmart, begging for food, and half the time, they're young people, and they have a dog.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, You have a dog, you can take care of the dog, but you can't
by and large,
go get a job.
Our whole society, there's so many entitlements and so many things going on, and with churches and government programs, you know, if you're healthy.
But the girls will say, oh, mom, you know, these poor people, I say, they're young, they're strong, you know, and God says, if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. I said, we can pray for them.
Yeah.
I said, but they look pretty darn healthy to me.
But it is true. Yeah, you have to be careful. Mm-hmm. You really have to be careful. But I was just really, I never gave to the guy.
I understand that, because you find people occasionally that just really, you know, need the help, but you get burned so many times, you know, with people who are capable. Armstrong and Getty were talking about one time where there's this whole class of rich kids that are doing this hippie thing, and they'll beg. And they have these huge trust funds, but they'll sit there looking like they're homeless people begging for money. And it's just like, how is that, even as a Christian, how does that motivate me to want to give to people? Because how do I know if you're, you know, because you don't want to feed addictions, and you don't want to give them money if they're trying to pull one over on you, you know? And
yesterday, I had gone to lunch with a friend who has a friend who is in desperate need. They have no food, and she's disabled and dying. And I said, you know, well, somebody could go to a food bank. And they're like, well, where's one at? And all that. And I know somebody who works at one. And so I called that person, got all the information, wrote it down, handed it to my friend, and I said, here, this is what you can give to them. And that's, there's nothing else that you can do other than pray.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something I struggle with too with my job. As most of you know, I'm a child therapist, psychotherapist, but all my clients are the poorest of the poor. I mean, they're extremely low income. They're all on Medi-Cal. But I struggle with the fact that here's these families who report they make maybe $800 a month on SSI for like a family of four, living on less than $1,000 a month. But they're coming in with nicer clothes than I have, brand new cell phone that the kids are playing with and sometimes throw on the ground, and, oh, well, it broke. Oh, well, my mom will buy a new one. And I'm like, that's a lot better than my cell phone that's barely holding together.
Yeah.
You know, I really struggle with that. I work for Mercy, and so they, you know, their big ministry is compassion and serving the poor and stuff. And I, you know, I believe very strongly in that. But, and a lot of my families truly are struggling. But when they call me up and say for the third time, I can't come in today, my car broke down, or I have no money for gas, but yet they went to McDonald's every day that week and just went shopping for new clothes.
This is where you could
exactly, and that, you know, I really struggle with that.
Yeah, I mean, if I went out and bought three jet skis, I couldn't
exactly.
Get my
mortgage. Or they say, these kids are aspiring and say, my mom's applying for SSI for me. Maybe they have ADHD or mild depression, not truly a severe enough disability to be on disability, but their parents are applying for disability from the government to get more money. You know, and they say, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do after high school. I'm on SSI. I don't need to get a job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd struggle.
Are we off track, Brent?
Yeah.
Little.
We're talking about work.
We can go on and on for, you know, I got stuff.
I
guess hopefully along the way, as we raise our kids, we encourage them to be productive citizens and work
right.
with their hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be busybodies or give into the worldly desires or wrong mm-hmm. priorities.
That's why it's important from even when they're small to give them chores.
Mm-hmm.
To just say you're part of this family.
Mm-hmm.
You know I've had to tell Phoebe. Phoebe has a couple of, I have a little bitty vacuum thing. You know, you can extend the handle, but you can keep it short, so it's just her size. And she's supposed to vacuum the rug in the kitchen. She's supposed to vacuum under the dining room table because it's like, well, Rich and I aren't the one throwing food on the floor.
Well, sometimes.
Well, you know, trying to give them that responsibility.
It started, you know.
And Phoebe's like, well, I don't want to do that. And I'd say, oh, you know, I just don't feel like making your supper today.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, immediately, whoa! You know, like, the Bible says, if you don't work, you don't get to eat. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course, then she likes to use it on Chi Day, you know. But it's like, if you don't do those things, you don't make it real for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do everything for your kids, you're really doing them a huge disservice.
Yeah. In the long run, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Any other thoughts, comments?
You don't want to go there, do you?
Yeah,
no. Doing the courteous thing here.
How much time you got?
Yeah, next one. Ephesians 4:25. Yeah, it's already written on the back page here. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor. What are some of the virtues that are in this passage? Mm-hmm.
If you say something, you'll keep it, or if you're not sure, you know, if you make a promise, somebody, you know what, yeah, I'll make the church on that day. I know you've been telling me for a while, yeah, I'm going to make it, and then they don't show up. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's like the boy of Cork, look, yeah, I can give up, you know, throwing pearls at swine, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, or if they have people have a reputation that they'll say, oh, yeah, I'll do this, or I'll do that, and they don't care through. Mm-hmm. And so we as Christians ourselves, we need to continue to glorify God. But you know, even if we can't make a promise, you know what? I like to try, but I can't be sure right now. I mean, I'd rather have someone say that.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'll do it, but I won't do it.
Right, right. I'm with you. That's one of my personal pet peeves.
Be a promise keeper.
We'll say sometimes the girls will say, well, can you promise that you'll do that? And I say, no, I can't promise you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? You know, between now and whatever it is they want to do, whatever.
They may be disappointed, but at least they know you're honest.
Right.
And in
right.
the long run, mm-hmm. you can be trusted as a parent
mm-hmm.
and as just a fellow Christian.
It kind of goes with, if you look down, if you have your Bible open to verse 29, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. this was my verse that I picked out last year at Women's Retreat. I think Pastor Carr read the, where was it? I think it was last year. And I just thought, that is a huge thing. You know, don't let unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. And then especially, but only when it's helpful for building others up according to their needs. Not my needs, but their needs. You know, I might need Phoebe to do something, and I might be really tempted to kind of work it to my advantage, but it's not necessarily good for her needs. You know, I have to build her up according to her needs, and Kaide according to her needs, and Garrison according to his needs. Not just, you know.
Where does the little white lie fit into this one? I'm curious as to.
That's a good question.
Like what?
Here it says, can you read it one more time?
Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen.
So there you go. The building up of anybody can be any little white lie. And I've got a friend who is against any of that at this point in his life anyway.
Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor. I mean, that's verse 25.
Yes, but sometimes speaking truthfully is not good enough.
No, that's
no,
yeah, that's
but you
true.
Can speak, I mean, you speak truthfully, but you have to edit what you say, and that's not necessarily
not to mention
lie.
Tact.
Yeah. Does this make me look fat?
Or perhaps sometimes just speak from silence, not approving, but not endorsing either.
Yeah, sometimes
yeah, that's
often your tongue.
That's dangerous.
As
yes.
Disapproval when you don't say anything either. So
you can hardly talk.
It depends. I mean, every circumstance is different, and we could talk again for an hour, and you could come up with specific examples and how you might.
I know one thing that I do as I think is this going to be helpful or harmful in answering that question. You know, and if it's not going to benefit, then I say I can't answer that question. Mm. You know?
Well, 9 out of 10 times, either it's going to be helpful probably or not harmful.
Uh-huh.
One time it might come back and bite you in some weird way, but the majority of the time, that's why it's a white lie. I mean, I think by definition, it's not that big a deal. But
well, we're all telling white lies when we tell our children about Santa Claus. Hello?
Yeah. And the Easter Bunny and all the Tooth Fairy came out this year because we lost tooth. My mom called and said, are you doing the Tooth Fairy with her? Because my brother and his wife do Santa Claus, do Tooth Fairy, they do all that stuff. You know, my sister-in-law's got some church background, but she's not real strong, so they do that and they buy into, to me it's a lie. It's like, I'm not gonna lie to my kids. They ask me if Santa Claus is real, I say, well, what do you think? You think there's a guy who comes down your chimney and stuff? Well, no. You didn't figure it out on your own. I didn't have to lie to you. I didn't have to, you know, build you up and then break you when you're like 6 or 7 and say, no, there is no Santa Claus. You know, and it's like, I can't do that. It just goes against everything in me. Same with the Tooth Fairy. I said, it's a really fun thing to think about, but it's imaginary. It's like you're watching a movie, you know. There's no Tooth Fairy. So, I
well, it used to terrify.
Yeah, my friends.
It used to terrify
really?
Trinity. That somebody's going to come down the chimney.
Oh, my.
And it doesn't even have to be Santa Claus. Now, anybody can come down the chimney.
Oh my. If this big jolly man can, anybody
yeah,
can.
I mean, you know, it could be something, a burglar, it could be, you know, whatever.
Wow.
But see, we never said,
keep
oh,
the fire
Santa
going.
Claus. You know,
spice.
Can't light the fire because, you know, it's Christmas Eve, or, like, we, you know.
Yeah, we have the cookies and milk.
Yeah. And it was funny because one night, they still thought there was a Santa Claus because other kids at
yeah.
school would tell them.
Yeah.
And Dan and I ate the cookies, and one of them woke up before we had gone to bed. And I'm like, those are for Santa Claus.
Well, you know, we don't go around telling other people's kids there's no Santa Claus.
Exactly.
And I don't encourage my kids to do that either.
Exactly.
Because thank there's you. That respect.
Oh, come on.
Of that, but it's like, you know, some kid came up to me and said, is there really a Santa Claus? I don't think I could lie to them. I would probably say, well, what do you think? Let's think about this.
But in theory,
because
yes.
Most kids, I think, really know that there's no Santa Claus.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's just something fun to believe in.
Yeah, but I feel like as a parent, I'm not going to lie to them. I'm not going to set that precedent.
Yeah, but
because in their mind, well, if you lie to me about this,
yeah,
what else did you lie to me about? And I don't want to, that could be a real fine
point. But getting back to his point, your point, I'm fired. It's the whole thing about the non-truth to spare some feelings, right?
Mm-hmm. The non-truth to spare some
feelings. White lie, yes.
White lie.
Yeah.
That kind of, so I guess that was that not your question? I kind of veered away from the question.
Well, Mike, let's use a different example, and I know this class is about kids and parenting, okay. But to veer off just a small tangent, if Stacy says, whether it's just between us or worse, in front of the other people, isn't their baby cute?
That's rough.
Okay, so now what am I supposed to say?
You look real hard
yes.
for something cute.
Yes.
You say she's got pretty
you know,
eyes.
But
yeah.
You don't say,
I love the color of your hair.
You don't
right,
say.
Then don't think about that. I think it's safe to just say
harder.
That, or maybe it takes, I mean, and then if I pause, that's not good.
When you have,
so
when
like,
when
it takes me a second to think about that.
Did anybody ever say that your child was ugly? Did anybody ever say that? Unattractive?
Not to our face.
When Phoebe was born, I went on the hospital and I was telling all the nurses, you got to come see my baby. She's just gorgeous. You got to come see my baby. Because to me, she's the
sure.
most gorgeous in the world.
Sure.
Nobody said to me, hey, this child's kind of mediocre. You know, so I'm just saying, but if you put yourself in that position.
I'm just saying,
yes.
No. So then I tell a white lie because I know if it takes more than half a second to react or say my white lie, then that causes it snowballs the wrong way, whether even it's between us or now the other couple or whatever. So I'm throwing it out. There's an example of.
Well, now, see,
when
now
is it
you
okay?
know,
when is it
but
not
when
okay?
you see a baby, yeah. you say, oh, he's got beautiful blue eyes or beautiful brown eyes, and you just focus on one trait and let it be your pat line.
Or I love
you
that
know?
Outfit. Or
yes.
All right, but that's one of 100, so we got to come up with the other 100.
He's so cute in that outfit.
So cute in that outfit.
So cute in that outfit.
Well, let's do check boxes. Now, write them all down.
All
the
yes.
From the men's conference.
No, they're not.
When Joel Heinitz was a baby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tell the story.
You know, I've known Sue for like 20 years.
And I know the Heinitzes.
And he's like, oh, he says this to Sue. Joel is very small. Your baby looks like Lord Voldemort.
He did.
And I just like.
No, it wasn't Joel, it was Martin. Wasn't it Martin?
No, it was Joel.
Oh, okay.
I can't believe you said that to like my best friend of like 20 years. And I think you don't say that to new moms, no matter what their baby looks like, because new moms are famously very hormonal.
Maybe you should have ended it with Ephesians, like you're quoting or something.
29?
You know, and Sue being Sue just went.
Or a wake up sleeper.
You know. But at the same time, it's just like, yeah, that just wasn't, you know.
Or at the same time, then
that was bad.
You also have to not say, oh, isn't that
cute?
Because you know, then you're putting him on that.
You shouldn't set him up.
Yeah. Don't
right.
set him up.
Right. You know, as, you know, using that as an example.
So I go back to the general question, though, is a white lie okay? Because it sounds like no, and yet yes, but then
no. No, it's not okay. It's not okay.
Everybody
but, because there's always, like you're saying, there's always something truthful that you
yeah.
can say that
just
deflects, but if it takes you a while to think of something, have a few ready answers to say, oh, you know, I love it when boys wear overalls. You know, something that doesn't say anything about
but
how the baby looks,
he doesn't.
But you could.
He doesn't care how babies wear overalls.
I know, but
we're guys.
An example.
He doesn't care.
And her life is just going to be full of awkward moments.
Yeah,
right.
Well,
right.
You know, that's the guys that one Parkinson's thing, because I'm not quick at stuff. You know, I'm either going to be honest or not quick, and so I can't be creative at the last minute and come up with something.
But you're not going to say, oh, that's
what
I'm
trying. But I think you just hope that people know you well enough to know that your intentions are well, and if you handle something wrong, you know, they're going to be forgiving.
Yeah.
And like we said before, if it's a stranger, you never have to see them again anyway.
Yeah,
right?
Hopefully. Yeah. It's not a first impression type meeting where that moment happens.
Well, you know, God says let your yes be yes and your no be no. So he's very, very clear about the whole line thing. You know, I just...
Well, let me read something here from the leader's guide that is focused towards kids, but might actually shed some light on what we're all talking about here. We never have to teach our children to lie. Even if they never hear a lie, they soon fabricate their own. But lying destroys relationships. And when I think of that right there, the first thing I think of in regards to your question is, yeah, it's tough to be put in that spot, but it could go a direction of it, that could be like the starting point, and then something gets built upon there, and then you're in a pickle because of the fact that the lying has to continue. You see what I'm saying?
And that's why I said 9 out of 10, you're okay. Well, the one is what you're talking about.
Right.
You're right. It could get caught up with it later in some, who knows how, but
sure.
Occasionally that happens. In the baby example, it probably won't, because it's a one-time question. And if you just say, yeah, that,
you hope.
And you come on to smile, and your baby's really cute, then you made peace, and it's all good. And but a minute later, you're already to the next topic or whatever. Exactly. And
aren't there some babies that are so ugly they're cute?
Yeah.
I mean, I
hope you aren't going to use that one.
It's so ugly.
Some dogs
cute.
Or cats that are so ugly, they're cute, but I don't think
it works on babies.
That is the ugliest.
Those Sharpays, right?
Dog.
Sharpays?
No. And I don't know.
Look at the next line.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting.
Well, I think part of the thing with the baby issue is, you know, I see babies quite regularly shopping. You know, that are just not that attractive. But I force myself to look at them a little more and look at, you know, some feature of them, you know, that is beautiful.
Heart.
Because to their mother, they're beautiful.
Their heart. Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody would ask me, you know, that question, you know, when Phoebe was a baby, I'm telling you, every story went in, some woman tried to touch her. And they were always commenting on how beautiful she was, to the point that I got a little scared that somebody was going to try and grab her. And, I mean, she was a tiny baby. And I'd be like, quit touching my baby, you know. Mm-hmm. And it got me really thinking, because I looked at her, and of course she's my child, she's beautiful to me. But when so many other people notice and focus, it made me really think about the people who have the child they know their child's not so attractive. You know, and who am I to make them feel any worse about that? You know,
well, right? But
for
I'm not
for saying
you go
something.
Out of your way to say
no.
If you think
no.
It's an ugly baby,
but
you don't even have to go next to him.
But I have gone out of my way to think about those things and think about things about babies, so that when I see a baby that might not be so attractive, that I can say, "Oh, look at how beautiful their eyes are," or something, because that builds. Of the mother, you know, because...
What would Jesus say?
Ooh.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you come, to it with a pure heart,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be genuine, and you're going to that's going to be your best shot.
Mm-hmm. Well...
Okay, so that means you've just gone full circle to me, and answering it right. And what I mean is, me as human James... Isn't this baby cute? And my gut instinct is no. But Jesus would say, yeah, every child is beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody is beautiful to them. So, boom, full circle. So if I stop and really think and answer it that way, then yeah, I'm not, when you say, isn't my child beautiful? It's not their physical
their heart.
So you see what I'm saying about full circle? So
but
you're right. If I look at it at that perspective,
then
every
you're saying
child
it honestly. Then you're saying it honestly. You're not saying a white lie. You're saying it honestly.
All right, so maybe it's just a matter of my perspective. I need to look past their physical features.
But there's hundreds, like you said, there's hundreds of questions. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I do enjoy beating a dead horse. But there's hundreds of questions.
He's not going to get up again,
Rich. I do
Rich.
Love beating a dead horse. Pardon me? I know, I'll go back to this in a minute. But there's hundreds of questions here along that same line that you could ask that aren't game related. You know, how do you like this for dinner? This is something you got to make for dinner. How do you like this? I mean, you say, no, I hate this. Say, oh,
Jesus would say,
what would Jesus say?
Thank you for making
dinner because
mm-hmm. it's incredible effort.
It's very thoughtful.
Food and I need.
But don't ever make it again. Never make this again.
Please, yeah, please don't make this again.
He's only said that once in 9 years. Please don't make this again.
And it didn't go over well.
And I'm like,
right, see, it didn't go over well.
I went over fine and never made it again because, I mean, I don't think I could taste that night, so.
Yeah. Go ahead.
As far as I guess what we just said, this baby ugly, baby beautiful, and all that, I think we have to go back to Psalm 139:14. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. You are so wonderful, I know them full well. Basically, it's just the foundation. Each child is a precious gift from God.
Exactly.
Especially in the cultural death we're still facing with abortion and all these issues that, of course, that was health reform that Obama may be pushing with allowing abortion to go on and so forth.
That's paying for it, you know.
This is life. Choose life. And I think anyone who chooses life, that's beauty right there. It's a reminder for myself as well.
I like that.
You know, we could spend time focusing on that stuff, and I struggle with that too, but that's human being.
You know,
from God.
And
we can't take it for granted.
Most of us, and it's a goal, right? You have this goal to get away from that television. Because most of us, we get involved in that television, mm-hmm. and it starts setting precedents that you don't even realize. And then we get really focused on the mm-hmm. surface, mm-hmm. where if we went home and we were doing what hopefully we should be doing, then, you know, we'd be in that better direction.
In other words, we could have a problem that we set ourselves up with
inward.
False expectations of based on what the world mm-hmm. gives.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, you know, you guys all work like in the public sector. You know, when I worked, I was here. And believe me, there's plenty of sin going on mm-hmm. in churches and stuff. But at least you know you're all kind of looking at it from the same viewpoint because we all wanted to serve God. We all wanted to please God. But when he would come home from, you know, working at the PD and he'd hear all this stuff. And now where he works too, you hear all this stuff. And you're just thinking, you know, thank God I'm not exposed to that every day. But it also kind of warps your perspective. Unless you're in God's Word,
mm-hmm.
you really start thinking, you know, like everybody else out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And let's also bring it back to the home front, too, as far as passing certain traits or certain being a good example to our children. I wanted to go ahead and finish off reading the rest of this here. It may seem, and it comes back to what your original question was, of course, James, it may seem harmless the first time a little child lies to a parent, but it's not. If such conduct is not checked right from the start, it will keep growing until the relationship is over. Mom and dad must not allow lies in their home. They must be examples of truthfulness. They must teach their children and use appropriate discipline when necessary. So, you know, we as parents, that's the thing about being a parent that I have always struggled with, because, you know, I kind of get caught up in my own little world, and I have to realize my daughter's watching me. She's learning everything from me that I'm doing, right and wrong. And I need to model, I need to be a good model to her of what some of these virtues that I want to instill in her. It basically starts with me. So if I expect something to be instilled in my daughter, where's she going to get it from unless I'm doing it myself?
Yeah.
So...
Because the old line, do as I say, not as I do, means nothing.
It doesn't apply. Can we move down? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so far so good, because she tells on herself, which is really, really convenient. She's like, well, I can't think of an example, but I'm just, it's great. I hope it continues.
That'll change.
Yeah, I know. Let me savor the moment, Debbie.
It's one of those things that, you know, I look at my kids, and all of a sudden, my girls are yelling at each other, and I'm thinking, yep, they're doing that because I yell at them. You know, but then you'll hear Kylie, you know, Phoebe was having a fit this week because she wouldn't get her shoes on. I mean, we were late to BBS because I couldn't get the girl out of the house with shoes on. And she had her feet in the shoes, and she had to put them on and tie them in the car. She learned how to tie her shoes this summer. So then she gets them tied, and she's just, she's like, oh, well, I got this one tied. And Kylie's sitting there really going, you're the best, sister. You're the best shoe tire. And I'm just like, you know, doing something a little right. Even though they yell at each other, they, you know, almost as equally are supporting each other and telling each other that they're great, you know. And they like to come up, Kylie likes to come up and say, you're just the best, you know. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it gives me hope that we're doing something right. It's through God's grace that they do that.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts, comments?
Just a quick word on shoes continuing with me, verse 25, Ephesians 4. Unwholesome talk, I always think of foul language too. I mean, we live in a world that's full of F-bombs. I mean, just dirty, filthy bleeps and this and that. It's frustrating to me, especially, you know, I work in my job. You know, just about everywhere. I guess everywhere, you know, it could be the office, it could be the warehouse, it could be a driving job, it could be the customers deliver to. It's like, it's blink this, blink that. I mean, it's like, I mean, I don't say anything myself, but, you know, or GED this or JC that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to continue to glorify God by speaking the words and try to think of the right things to say too, and not, in our words, our thoughts too. I mean, it's an everyday struggle ourselves because we live in this world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just a matter of living not of the world.
So, yeah,
and also talk, just.
And that's a hard thing to do,
Yeah.
I find that to be a hard thing to do.
We're in the battlefield, guys.
Yes, yes.
We've got something to get through.
Why don't we move to the breakout and discussion? Divide into two groups, which we'll just talk amongst ourselves here. Have one group discuss what husband and wives can do to fight the threat of sin poses to their marriage relationship, and have the other group discuss what parents need to do to fight the threat that sin poses to building a family with strong relationships. So let's talk about the first one. What can we as husbands and wives do to fight that threat of sin within our marriages?
Number one being the Word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think number two is limit the outside influence, like you were saying, like TV, and, you know, be very selective in the movies you choose to watch, and, you know,
then
the friends
you choose to associate with. I'd agree
with that. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Anybody? Well, just supporting each other in everything we do. I mean, other, you know, unless it's something that they shouldn't be doing, but, you know, just supporting. And, you know, for me, you know, a stay-at-home mom, I always say thank you to Dan for giving us the opportunity for me to be able to stay home and raise the kids.
You know what? You said that a couple weeks ago, and I was thinking, you know, it's 50-50 no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're sitting at home, you have access to your checking account, you have your access to your money, you could go spend enough money that he makes, and you both could have to go out and try and pay those bills.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just as appreciative to my wife as she is to me.
Well, see, and exactly, and that's what he will say too. He says the same thing. He says, I like the fact that I can go home to a clean house and a cooked meal, and not the kids arguing, but. You know,
Yeah.
But it's true. It is. It's 50-50.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
But it's what's interesting about the sin and who we associate with and stuff like that. I have no friends actually outside of church. I don't know anybody except for a couple people that used to come here. You know? And so we're not around people who use foul language or who get drunk or who, you know, like the pastor was talking about this morning. So it's, we're not really around real sinful, even though we are around sin. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Not blatant. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I think that's, it can be harder to deal with rooting out the sin when you're only have Christian friends, because you tend to fall into stuff and you sometimes don't recognize it because you're too close to it. Like the whole gossipy thing is, yeah, I think, sometimes harder. But I'm in the same boat. My friends are here. I have a couple of friends that, like you said, used to go to St. Mark's and don't any longer. But this is basically it, you know. But
I want to. This is a little bit off topic, but when we were in San Diego, we were in a restaurant, and one of my girls said, "Why are there so many black people here?" Mm. And I had to think about it. Because when you think about it, they come here, they come to this school. Our neighborhood is all basically Ukraine. You know, so I had to tell them, I said, "Well, you see black people, you see Mexican, you see Asian." I said, "A lot of people come to San Diego to visit." And I said, but then the next question is, how did they get that color of skin? And I said, God made them that. How can he do that? If he made us in his image, so then what color is God?
Power. God throwing it out there across the world. And then that's how it happened. No, seriously. So you go back to the tower.
Well, why are Norwegians so white?
Yeah.
Why do you get the blonde?
There's less sun over there.
it's adaptations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's not evolution, but it's adaptations that we as human beings have made to.
But it just made ourselves. Me think that my kids honestly do not see other races.
It's never anything that's occurred to them before until now, because they were exposed to it.
Yeah. And it was like, and then my first thought was, oh my gosh, my kids are prejudiced.
No, because they're acting
not what it was.
It's just curiosity.
Yeah.
The difference between
the
different
races.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, Pat. Are you here to monitor us?
What's that?
Are you here to monitor us, Pat?
Sorry to join you so late, but I was wandering around here. I thought this was a good Bible class to join in.
It's a very good class. Good conversation.
Well, what you're saying, not to disagree with you or you, but a friend of mine in college one time, I was talking with her dad, and he was adamant on the whole 50-50 thing. I said, no, it's 100-100.
Yes.
Because if you only give 50%, you're not giving enough to make your marriage work.
Right.
You know, but it's kind of a thing, but it's a mindset that if you're thinking of giving 100%, no matter what the other person is giving, you know, you're going to have
a win-win situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there are days where Dan's going to have to give 150% because I can't give more than what I can give. Or there'll be days where he's, you know, can't give 100%. But we are at least a team. And no matter what, it comes out to equal 100%.
I think too, being okay with if he's giving 100% and I happen to only be giving 5 that day, that he still like loves me and doesn't, you still recognize the love for each other and not like, I'm giving 100 and you're only giving 5.
Yeah,
what's wrong with this? And I think that was brought up at that marriage. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like the basis was if our love for each other is modeled after Christ's love for us, even as sinful human beings, I think that's difficult to do. But if we can make that the focus and that should be how that should be the model for our marriage. That's what's gonna help keep the threat away.
Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that is to be,
to be in the Word.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Not in the Word, then you can't really do that.
Yeah.
Because this is where you get your support from.
Yeah.
And the courage and the, you know,
Mr. Warren.
The impetus, you know, to want to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
How much time do you need for that?
Oh, do you need time?
No, I don't need any time.
Oh, okay.
I was just listening to your conversation.
Oh, you got it. Well, the last, why don't we use the last couple minutes for that last question. Let's think about this lesson. What do you see as the greatest challenge or a threat to each of our family relationships? And how have you been handling the challenge or threat until now? And with this class, explore some possible ways that you would deal differently with this challenge or threat. So what to you is the largest or the greatest threat in your own family?
Okay. Probably outside influences.
Television.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Disney Channel isn't necessarily the Disney Channel, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's the most unbelievable, frightening thing that I ever was exposed to, you know. I could never imagine being frightened by the Disney Channel. The stuff that they have available on there for, you know,
you're
not on top of it.
Disney was an atheist, I think.
Well,
you know, and he's got a lot of dark stuff coming out in those movies.
Yeah, he does.
You know, that would be that really dark one.
A lot of humanistic stuff. There's one movie that we watched. I don't know when it was, if Phoebe was little or if it was before that. Oh, I know what it was. It was The Black Cauldron. It was when I was younger. And we went to see it, and, you know, I was like in my teens, and my, you know, younger brother was, he was like 13, I was like 15. And like, we went with my mom, and we were just going, this is for little kids. Because there's a part where, I don't know if it's a little person or a mouse or something, gets stuck in this lady's cleavage. And I'm going, I don't want to see this, you know, I'm 15 years old and I don't want to see this. And yet, this is like a G or a PG movie for little kids.
Well, the Transformer movie, I didn't go see it, but Dan did. And when he came home, he was so shocked at how that there were 6, 7, 8-year-old kids in this movie. And he was just blown away. How horrible, you know, and how the kids are allowed to watch 3 channels.
Mm-hmm.
The tape. And if there's on those channels, if it's not SpongeBob or, you know, something that they're allowed to watch, TV's off.
Well, video games too. I can't tell you how many, like 5 to 10-year-olds I have who maybe have an older sibling that has Grand Theft Auto and all these. And these 5, 6, 7-year-olds are playing these video games. It's like Susanna can play, you know, Blue's Clues or some of the sites that are linked to St. Mark's website, you know, cool math games or something. Mm-hmm. Nothing else.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
And it's the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Dan and I were watching a movie and it was like, we're sitting there and we're like, we looked at each other and we're like, we can't watch this.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so bad, the language.
Mm-hmm.
So we turned it off and sent it back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's true. There's so much out there.
Everywhere.
That we have to shelter our kids from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's even here. Mm-hmm. There's stuff that happened here that we have to shelter our kids from.
But there's a flip side to that, too, in my opinion. And yes, you do, but it's also more of a how do you deal with it after the fact, because
right.
Society is society and life is life, and they're going to go see it whether
mm-hmm.
you like it or not. You can't, unless you keep them in your bubble.
Well, and
sheltering,
right.
And I think I know what you're saying. Sheltering is different than the extreme, which would be the bubble. So,
well, you're sheltering them. You're protecting them. You know, you're not sheltering because you go to take your kid's grocery store and you walk down the aisles and you hear F this.
Right.
And that.
Right.
Right.
And it's just like, you know. We had neighbors, they were not that renters are horrible, but they weren't the homeowners, so they don't treat the property as nice.
Yeah.
And they had 15-year-old kids out. We were outside with the girls, Penny was a baby, we were doing yard work, and all of a sudden I'm hearing F this coming from the driveway next door. Phoebe, who's like 2 and a half, goes, and I'm like,
yeah.
And I go right over with the girls. I said, you're coming with me, you know, just because I was ready to just totally explode. And I said, you know, your kids up here, they're smoking, are they age to smoke? And they're saying the F word. My 2-year-old just said the F word because she heard it over here. It, you know, it's like, so she kind of tried to take care of it, but it's just like, society's standards are just so low.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to keep our standards high, you know, like you were saying, you got to deal with it when they hear it. Mm-hmm. We don't talk that way.
It's about teaching. It's a daily struggle.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a daily struggle.
And teaching right from wrong and,
right.
you know, having to recognize it.
And you know, as an adult, you occasionally, you do say something you shouldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
And then if your child is there or not, you still need to ask for forgiveness and move on. But it's hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, to keep these kids. My kids, our kids, you know, where they're not out there listening to all this or seeing this.
I know recently where Susanna was reading that. I think she's reading a Junie B. Jones book or something. And there aren't bad words in there, but to a 5-year-old, there's a lot of words that seem like bad words.
Yeah.
And she says, I don't like that. I don't remember what it was. I don't like that word, Mom. I'm going to use a different word.
I know.
Like, I really hope that continues.
Because you told me when I lent you those books that she didn't like the word hate.
I think it was hate, yeah. And so she substituted another word. She said, that's a bad word.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I read those, when I was reading those books to the girls too, I would substitute words all the time. Because it's like, I don't like the way they phrase this. Mm-hmm. Or
It seems stupid.
Stupid.
Yeah.
I think it's stupid.
Yeah, and also, one time when I girls labeled the lesson, I said a really bad word. I'm like, oh, look, it was the S word. I'm like, what S word? Right?
Yeah.
She goes, stupid. And I'm like, okay, you know. You know, but still, you know, because they're not allowed to say stupid or, you know. So
well, those words
really
coming from
word.
Little kids little sound kids. So awful because the kids, I said, like, oh, stupid thing. And the kids were like, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, hearing my kids say it, it sounds so much vulgar.
Yeah.
Like, that hate word. And so
but
I
they,
do, I have to
they use it like a word because you're stupid.
Right.
You know,
you
don't use it like,
word.
Oh, I did something stupid or dumb.
Yes.
Yeah,
well, thank you everybody for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Don't forget to
talk. And we'll see you next week.
Oh, Austin, will you change Austin's stupid idea?